I love chatting to journalist Rosalind Powell. So today we're going to have a chat about a couple of subjects. The first one being, is chivalry dead? Welcome back to the show, Rosalind.
Thank you.
I absolutely love it. My husband's great. I'm very old-fashioned. He opens the door for me, stands up if I walk into a room and we're in a restaurant. But I know that you said it happened to you recently and it made you feel old.
Well, it not just once. It's happened several times when I've been travelling on the tube. And, you know, men and women, I have to say, have sort of fallen over themselves to stand up and give me their seat. And I have to admit, to begin with, I was absolutely horrified.
Wow. I think if a woman does it, that's a bit horrifying. I get where you're coming from there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, it has been mostly men. I mean, a couple of times it's happened with women. But I think, for me, it wasn't anything to do with the politics of, you know, sexism or anything like that. It was purely to do with the fact that it suddenly made me feel ancient. I thought, I must look really old and knackered if people are offering me their seat. And it became a bit of a sort of wake-up call, actually. I'd come into work every day and I'd say, you know what, it's happened again. And everyone was like, mouths agog.
I doubt very much that's the reason. Did you then do some research, or did you ask your friends whether it happened to them?
Yes, I did. And it happened to a colleague of mine sort of on a fairly regular basis, but she loved it. She thought it was really chivalrous and was very grateful, and, you know, thought the men offering her their seats were very gallant. I spoke to other friends who said that, you know, one friend said she'd rush off and get Botox done. I mean, on the whole, I have to say, most of my friends who are my age, which, as I say, is sort of north of 50, they were horrified by the idea. Yeah,
I think what really, really must be awful, if it's somebody that clearly is older than you, maybe an older woman, and they give up their seat for you, then that's got to be awful.
Well, I think, I mean, to be fair, I think the women on the whole were younger. I mean, even with an older gentleman, I can sort of understand it a bit more, because they're from a different generation and would have been brought up in a different way. Mm. They would have been taught to give up their seats. It was the younger guys which were sort of shocked me. But what was interesting is I wrote this article about it for the Telegraph, and then I don't usually sort of read comments under things I've written, but I did on this occasion, and the comments were really fascinating, actually, just the breadth and range of opinion. And there was one really sweet one from a Polish guy saying that in Poland it's considered impolite not to offer your seat to a woman. It's an unwritten rule, and manners are very much taught in school. Not only manners, but how to be an English gentleman, which was really interesting. So he said, have all the English gentlemen disappeared from the UK and gone to live in Poland?
Well, quite possibly. The problem is, I think if I was a man, I think it must be very difficult, because nowadays they don't know whether they're doing right for doing wrong, do they?
Well, that's right. I mean, a lot of the comments were sort of, you know, a guy saying he'd give up his seat for an elderly or injured man, but never for a woman, for fear of being branded sexist.
Yeah.
He said the same as holding open doors. I mean, some of the comments veer on the sort of slightly bitter. Like, there was someone who said, when I was young, my father would always stand up on a bus for women. He said, I don't do it myself. As far as I'm concerned, they can stand now because we're all equal.
Oh, crikey. I don't think Emmeline Pankhurst had this idea when she started fighting for us.
No, but it's interesting. Some of the comments from women were interesting as well. I mean, a couple of women who are obviously around my age saying, oh, thank God I'm not the only one. You know, I was horrified when it started happening to me. And then a 70-year-old woman says that she bleaches her hair blonde and never gets offered. And she said she'd like to, but she's not prepared to go grey for it.
Oh, wow. Do you think, I mean, believe me, I'm a similar age to you, so I get it, but do you think when you were young, say if you were in your 20s, and somebody offered their seat, would it not have offended you because you were younger anyway?
Probably not. I mean, maybe when I was slightly younger, I don't know. I mean, you know, I was a teenager in the 80s where, you know, sexual politics were quite strong, so maybe I would have thought, oh, how dare you, you know, how sexist.
Yeah.
But I think now, if I was 20 now, possibly not. I mean, I do think it's a lot to do with myself. You know, I appreciate that it's to do with me, and I have to sort of accept that, you know, I am a certain age and not be so much in denial for it. But then equally, you know, I don't think I do look frail and in need of a sit-down either.
I've seen a photo of you, you so don't.
Pardon?
I've seen a photograph of you and you so don't.
Oh, thank you. But, I mean, I think now I've come round to it, so now if someone does offer me a seat, and it still does happen, you know, I just accept it, you know, politely. And not that I was ever rude to anybody that offered me the seat anyway, but, now I'm just quite grateful, actually.
Yeah, you've made peace with it now.
Because who doesn't want to sit down, frankly?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think we've gone too far if they stop doing it for either, heavily pregnant ladies or the infirmed and really elderly. I think then we've gone a step too far because, you know, I like chivalry, I really do, but we've got to look after each other as well.
Yeah, no, that's it. I mean, it's sort of random acts of kindness as well, and I think especially when you live in a city like London where we're all in such a rush at all times and we're shoving each other and glaring at each other and all the rest of it, it's actually a really nice thing for someone to do for someone else, you know, for whatever reason. It's kind, and you don't see a lot of kindness, actually.
No, that's true. That's very true. On to another subject. I know that you wrote a book, How You Met Your Son, because you adopted your son.
That's right.
And I'm always fascinated to know what the actual route is for adoption, particularly in the UK. Is this an easy process? I mean, is there a sense of ageism around it? Do you have to be a certain age? How does it work?
No, I think it's probably not as difficult as people think in terms of, age limit and all of that. There needs to be a certain age gap between you and the child, and I can't, off the top of my head, remember what it is. But, I mean, if you're, if you're in your 40s, that won't prevent you from going down the adoption route. I mean, it's a difficult process in that it's very thorough and it's very complex.
Yeah, quite.
Takes... You know, you are sort of examined and studied and, you know, quizzed for over a long period of time.
Which
some people find really hard, but I didn't actually, only because I see that it's necessary. I know there's been moves to sort of speed up the process, and I know that under Cameron's government, for example, they did try and sort of cut down waiting times because there's, you know, as with anything, there's an awful lot of bureaucracy that you have to get through, and some of the delays weren't, no, necessary. But I think it has to be rigorous. I think it does have to be a rigorous process.
And how old was your son when you adopted him?
He was two. Before his second birthday, yeah.
Do you have to go through sort of a seeing him for a couple of times a week first to get him used to you, or is it literally one day you just meet him and take him home?
Well, the interesting thing is, which I found the most difficult thing to get my head around, was that you actually matched with a child before you actually meet them. So it is like an arranged marriage in a way, in that you know that this person is going to become your child, but you haven't actually met them. So you've made that commitment even before the meeting. And then once you are matched, you have what's called an introduction, which can be 1 week or two. In our case, it was a week, where you go and spend every day with the child in their environment, in their home environment. And then at the end of that, you bring them home.
Oh, that's so sweet. How old is he now?
He's 15. So, he's a big, strapping teenage lad,
With all the shortcomings that big, strapping teenage lads have.
Actually, I have to say, to his credit, he's not that bad. Oh, he's, as teenagers go, he really isn't that bad. He's
a good boy.
He is. it's been a fantastic experience. It really has. It's been an incredibly positive experience. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to write about it, because it has been. I'm very aware of the fact that there are a lot of people out there who don't have as positive an experience and are really struggling for all sorts of reasons. But I have to say, we've had a great time.
I think it's sometimes the luck of the draw, because I have three wonderful stepchildren who I consider are my own, and they call me Mom. But other people I hear, through no fault of their own, have a really difficult time with stepchildren. So I think a lot of it is obviously down to testimony to you and how you brought him up, but also the luck of the draw as to how they are.
Yes, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, our son, he's naturally, his temperament is he is a naturally quite funny, quite uncomplicated person. I mean, and that's down to all sorts of things, you know. But I mean, he was lucky in that he was in very sort of secure, loving foster home before he came to us, so he didn't have an awful lot of upheaval in his early life, which, you know, obviously can have a huge impact on kids when they're tiny. So we were very lucky in that respect. But I think he is naturally just quite you know, laid back, yeah. quite, you know, quite easygoing. That's just the way he is. So, yeah, but I do think luck does play a big part as well. And it's a huge leap of faith for anyone that adopts. It's a huge, massive leap of faith.
Yes, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. And it makes you wonder whether it's nurture or nature. It's probably a bit of both, the way that he's got such a sunny disposition.
Well, yes. I mean, if he'd grown up in a less pleasant environment, then, yeah, of course, that would have... But that's why it's so important to look at, you know, the early life experiences of any of these kids, because, you know... If they've had a terribly, you know, difficult background where they've been neglected or abused or any of that, then that's going to have a huge impact on their psychological and emotional development.
And how was he when you told him about his adoption?
Well, he's always known. You know, he's known from. So it wasn't a matter of one day sitting him down and saying, you know what, you're adopted. I mean, he would have had memories from being, you know, living with his foster carers anyway. And you know that these days, of course, you know that adoption is very open in that respect. We don't live in that climate of secrecy now where, you know, it's all hush hush and hidden under the carpet. You know, adopted kids know from the outset that they're adopted. So it's never been a big surprise for him. He's just grown up with that knowledge.
Well, it's a lovely story. People can still buy the book. It came out in 2016, I believe.
That's right, yes, and it's How I Met My Son.
I Met My Son, A Journey Through Adoption by Rosalind Powell, who we're speaking to now. Rosalind, it's always a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you very much.
Do accept gracefully next time you're on the tube. And
oh, absolutely. Yeah, anyone out there that fancies giving an old bird a seat, then feel free.
Brilliant. Thanks for being on the show, Rosalind.
Right.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.